Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of Podcast on the Brink. It's good to be back. Took last week off, and today have a special guest, Tyler Harris, the executive director of Hoosiers for Good, which is an announcement I think a lot of you heard about the last couple weeks in terms of what they're doing with name, image, and likeness at Indiana. Tyler, welcome to the show. Excited to learn a lot about this new organization and kind of what you guys are going to do to kind of help move, help these student athletes with the NIL.
Yeah, Alex, appreciate you having me, and excited to discuss what we're doing.
So as we were talking a little bit before, this is a new endeavor for you. Obviously, your background, you worked for IU Athletics. Just, you know, as much detail as you want to give, just kind of how did this idea become reality, and what is your role on a day-to-day basis now? You know, you've been in the job a little bit more than a month, and I'm sure you're still kind of getting your bearings, getting up and running and learning what you want to do every day. I'm just kind of curious for the background on how all this got started.
Yeah. You know, a lot of the behind the scenes work honestly was pretty solidified before I started. I started on March 7th. We announced on March 8th. So there were several charitable partners that were already on board at that point. And the vision was already solidified. And really, Hoosiers for Good is a nonprofit seeking 501c3 status. I'm the sole employee of Hoosiers for Good. And so I report to a board of directors. Our board is Pete Yonkman, who's the president of Cook. And he's the president of our board. Calbert Cheney, who's the vice president, former student athlete. Wes Jones, who is our treasurer. He's a former IU varsity club staff member. And then Allison Jordan is our secretary, who's former women's soccer student athlete who started Everybody Plays. And we have a couple other board members that are IU alumni and serve on at charitable organizations. And then our legal counsel is Fred Glass, former IU athletic director. And really, Pete is the brainchild behind all this. I think he recognized NIL is here to stay. No one's going to change that. But if we're going to do it, let's do it in a way that benefits everyone. Let's shine a light on charitable organizations, and let's use student athletes, NIL, who are very recognizable in this state. You know, they're to a certain extent, some of them are more influential on social media than frankly politicians. And so if we can use NIL in a way that's very positive to shine a light on charitable organizations and all the great work that they do, that seems like the Hoosier way of doing things, just doing it the right way, but using NIL, whether you love it or hate it, do it in a way that's really positive. And so I think it's great. And we've seen several third parties, if you will, since we announced, come up with this charitable component as well. So I think it's great. I think it's a model that's going to take shape around the country. And quite frankly, it's the Indiana way, where, you know, you can use NIL in a way that's going to benefit everybody.
So I just want to get this out of the way first, because this is kind of, you know, my role and what I do with Inside the Hall Explained to you. I've been doing this for 15 years now, and, you know, I'm talking to Indiana fans and interacting with them on a day-to-day basis via social media, via the website, via our paid community. And I think the biggest question a lot of people have, and you said it, I think you made a great compelling point for why this is such a good thing, is NIL is here to stay, right? You're the brainchild behind this, kind of said that, and I agree with you. But there's a lot of people that are just skeptical of the whole idea of NIL. And I think a lot of that's founded in the fact that there's this deep-rooted belief with some that kids are given a scholarship to college and they shouldn't be compensated in other ways. But these are the rules now, and this is kind of how things are evolving. I guess what would you say to those people, IU fans, who are maybe skeptical in terms of donating to something like this or putting their support behind something like this, in terms of how this is kind of a necessary thing for student athletes to have this kind of a support at IU, in terms of ultimately Indiana being a place from an athletic department and a success standpoint that it can thrive and move forward. I think it's important for NIL to be a strength at IU.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I get it. There's certainly stories out there in ways that NIL was used in a way that really wasn't supposed to be. No one thought it should be used that way. And so I get the concern that NIL is just gonna make college athletics something that it's never been about. And unfortunately, from a student athlete perspective, fortunately, it's here to stay. It's reality. And while some people may not be in favor of it, it's another factor in a student athlete or a potential student athlete's decision when they decided to go to a place or if they're going to remain at a place. That's another factor that they consider, and quite honestly, may be the most important factor this day and age.
Can you describe this is kind of in the early stages, but you guys have already announced like the first kind of batch of deals, and there's obviously Trace Jackson Davis and Race Thompson are the two names from a men's basketball perspective that people are going to be most familiar with. But, you know, Grace Berger was one from women's basketball, Jack Tuttle from football, several others. I'm curious if you can describe like the criteria of how these deals came about, not specifically on any one student athlete, but just in terms of how you decide who you're going to partner with. How were those individuals selected?
No, that's a great question. Thankfully, my previous role as the head of compliance at IU, I knew a lot of these student athletes, and I knew they genuinely cared about doing things, using the NIL to positively impact whatever they're doing. And I know a lot of them care about charities and shining a light on charities. So because of my previous role, I was able to know which student athletes really genuinely cared about this endeavor, even before we started, just through conversations about their interests outside of their sport. And so, that helped me, identify student athletes. But then it's like anything, I want to make sure they're adding value. I want to make sure that they're passionate, and it's like an interview process from there. And so as we came closer to our announcement, we really honed in and zeroed in on those 14 student athletes, because through that process, we learned that they really cared about making their community better, whether they're from the state or there's a specific charity that they really, really love and really love what they're about. And so I think we got a great first group. I think they're really going to positively impact the charitable organizations. And quite honestly, I was just on a call with Indiana Wish about an hour and 15 minutes ago. And when we announced Thursday, our first class, and Grace and McKenzie put out their tweets, the social media exposure for Indiana Wish in a given time frame went up 200%. And that's just awesome to see. And that's just a simple tweet. And so you can imagine as they lead into these in-person appearances, just how they're going to be able to shine a light on some of the good work that Indiana Wish, for example, is doing.
So that kind of leads me to my next question. You talked about appearances specifically there for Grace and McKenzie, but in all these instances, what I guess, can you just walk me through like what, not a specific deal, I'm just saying what the obligation is from your side of things, and then what's the obligation from the student athlete side of things? Let's say there's a men's basketball player that you want to partner with, and you reach a deal with that person. What does the process look like from the time the deal has started to be negotiated, and then what types of things can be included in the deal in terms of obligations? Can it be things like social media, in-person appearances? Obviously, one thing I'm pretty sure of, you can't sign a deal that's contingent on someone like coming back to school or guaranteeing like that they're going to be at school. And a lot of people had that question. They saw that Trace and Race came to agreements and they wondered, does that mean they're going to be back? Well, no, not necessarily, because the deal doesn't necessarily stipulate that. But I'm just kind of curious from a big picture perspective, how all that works and how all that ties together. I think people would be kind of curious on the nuts and bolts of that.
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, it really depends on if the student athlete has a NIL agent or not. If they do, you know, it typically takes longer to come to resolution than one that doesn't. But generally, all agreements have similar deliverables in terms of what they have to do. And every student athlete will have to make a certain number of appearances with their charitable partner at one of their events. And when I say appearances, it could be, you know, they're going there, they're signing autographs, they're, you know, doing a presentation of skills. You know, really runs the gamut. It's not showing up for 2 minutes, saying hi and leaving, you know, so there's going to be a commitment. So there's going to be a certain number of appearances with their charitable partner. There's going to be, you know, a certain number of appearances at our events. You know, we're working through some events that hopefully we'll have, and we want them part of that. In terms of social media, there's going to be a required number of social media posts. Generally, those are going to range between 12 and 14 social media posts. And the bulk of those will be promoting an upcoming appearance, or at the back end, you know, them telling the story of what they learned and what the charitable organization is doing, their mission, their clients they serve. And so a certain number of appearances, certain number of social media posts, and then every student athlete would be required to, in their social media bio, say that they're a Hoosiers for Good student athlete. And so those are generally kind of all the deliverables that are required in an agreement.
One question that I got a lot, and I don't know if you can speak to this or not, but do the deals that student athletes get vary in value based on their popularity in any way, what sport they play, or are there any other factors that would go into that?
Correct. That's a good question. You know, we want to be diverse. We want to be broad-based, right? And I think our announcement shows that. But we're certainly not one-size-fits-all. And so we'll have metrics that we use to determine a range. And those metrics could include name recognition, social media influence, the program they're associated with and their social media influence, national recognition for, or national exposure for us and our charitable partner. Those are all metrics that we look at to determine a value range. And so definitely not one size fits all.
When you look at the landscape of NIL nationally, you know, in the release and you know, the different things that you've kind of said here and on the website, it kind of sounds like you guys are trying to kind of set the pathway for maybe what could be a model in other places. When you look out just nationally at the NIL space, I'm sure it's something that you study a lot and see what other schools are doing. I guess, where has Indiana been in terms of the space in general, and are there things that kind of go beyond? I know you don't work for IU anymore, but I'm just kind of curious, like what you've seen in terms of IU as an institution previously, how they've kind of embraced NIL. Because to me, it seemed like early on, you know, the open doors stuff that they were kind of one of the first schools, I think, on board with that, and it seemed like they really embraced it. I'm just kind of curious, is that still the case in terms of where they stand, and what other things do you see on the horizon that can maybe be built upon? Obviously, Hoosiers for Good is going to be a big part of that, but what else is out there maybe that in the future, in the next couple of years, that people can maybe look forward to?
Yeah, you know, I think when we're talking about Indiana and the athletic department and kind of where they position themselves on NIL, I think you're right. I think they're really at the forefront. The reality is they're limited in what they can do. And so when we talk about, or I shouldn't say we, when I was at IU and we talked about us being at the forefront, we educated our student athletes, you know, got them in brand courses. We got them in financial literacy courses. We brought in people to educate them. At the end of the day, that's about all you can do. You can educate donors, but it really takes somebody to step up to the plate and doing these things. And so, you know, that's where I hope people understand is that when we talk about NIL on the front end of things, they are in reality, it's just they're limited in what they can do beyond what they've done. And so, you know, I think this landscape will continue to evolve. It would not surprise me one bit if in the next year, every single FBS school has a collective that's associated with it. You know, and that's just the landscape. That's the reality. And so what we're hopeful is our model is a model that other collectives that are going through the process that potentially will announce that they take a hard look at what we're doing, because it's a great way for to benefit everyone, right? You can shine a light on charitable organizations. Student athletes get to use their NIL. There's an added benefit that student athletes, from a brand perspective, being involved in charitable participation. You know, so there's a win for really everyone involved. And so, you know, I just think the next couple of years, every FBS school is going to have a collective that's associated with them.
So when you say a collective that's associated with the school, what, you know, what are the, I guess, the rules around that? Like, how, what is that actual partnership? Is there anything official, or is it just kind of like, you know, obviously Hoosiers for Good exists to work with IU athletes, not Purdue or any other school. I'm just kind of curious, like, what the official relationship is between Hoosiers for Good and Indiana Athletics.
Yeah, you know, I was probably losing or using the associated terminology a little too loose. You know, it's they're completely separate. You know, and really, right, what I meant was one that's set up to benefit student athletes at X school,
right?
And so there's no relation with us and IU. You know, we certainly keep in touch with them from a transparency standpoint to make sure they're comfortable and everything. But I'm very, because of my background, very mindful that I don't want to put them in any position that would be of that would compromise them.
What do you feel like is the biggest challenge, just in terms of getting Hoosiers for Good where you want it to be in the next 2-3 years? Is it just educating people and kind of doing things like this, talking on this podcast, letting people know that you guys exist? I mean, obviously you have announced this initial deal, but like, what are, I guess, your goals for maybe 6 months down the line in the next couple of years? What do you ultimately want this to become?
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of it is, you know, right now exposure, you know, people knowing that we're out there doing this, we're using NIL in a responsible way. You know, I'll turn my attention next to fundraising. And for me, it was important to go through the first class and solidify that first class before I went to ask anybody for money. It's a lot easier to pitch a vision when you've already when you can show something, as opposed to pitching a vision then there's nothing out there. And so, you know, I think as in-person appearances and more social media posts go out, that'll you know, help with exposure. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we're providing some really awesome opportunities, and you know, we'll need donations to be able to continue these opportunities. You know, the money runs out at some point.
Yeah. So I noticed on the website, I clicked on the donate button. It said donations at this point are not yet tax deductible. Where are things in terms of that process? I'm sure that's something that is of utmost importance to you. And obviously people want to have that when they're going to donate money to any charitable organization. I'm sure there's a lot of, I don't want to call it red tape, but anytime you're getting something up and new running, you have to go through the proper channels and get everything solidified. I'm just kind of curious from your perspective where things are with that and when there you could see that come through and people would be able to get their tax benefit from donations.
Yeah, you know, we've filed for 501c3 status. Unfortunately, you know, it's, you know, you go through the IRS and that process is not quick. It's a 9 to 12 month process. And so we filed and we're ready to hear more and if we need to do anything else. And we think we have a persuasive argument as to why we should be, but we're certainly not yet. You know, the added benefit, you know, since, you know, we believe we've got a persuasive argument and, you know, dealing, you know, just with charities, the added benefit is if we do get 501c3 status, it applies retroactively. So if you're giving a donation today and you know that, you know, they're not 501c3 status yet, but we are in 9 months, you know, it's retroactively applied. You may have to file an adjustment for your taxes, but it's certainly retroactive.
Do any of these NIL collectives that are out there right now have that status to your knowledge, or are you in the same boat as other schools? I mean, this seems like it's all pretty new. I don't know if you can speak to how many other collectives are out there that are kind of charity based at other schools, but I'm just kind of curious if you guys feel like you're kind of at the forefront of getting that status, or if, to your knowledge, where other other collectives that may be associated with other schools are at in the process?
Yeah, you know, I've certainly seen some collectives out there that say they are tax deductible, and there's just no way that's true. You know, I the process takes too long, and NIL is too new. While they may have a persuasive argument as to why they should be, I can't believe that they would be already tax deductible, knowing that our legal counsel said it's going to take 9 to 12 months. So I haven't seen outside of that a lot, you know, even say that they're tax deductible. I've seen a few. Ever since our announcement on March 8th, I think a third party affiliated with Kentucky announced that they're going to engage in, you know, charitable activity through a collective. Ohio mm-hmm. State, I believe, well, I shouldn't say Ohio State, a third party to Ohio right. State announced a charitable. I think it's called the Foundation. So they're going to be involved in charitable activities. And then last Friday, Clemson, I screw that up. A group associated with Clemson.
Yeah, no, it's like it's hard to talk about. You know, it's like I get it. It's all new, and so the way we right. phrase it, but we understand what you're right. saying. Go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
No. And so I think last Friday, a group associated with Clemson, using that associated word loosely again, have announced a collective that has a charitable focus, and I think there's already $6 million in that one. So. They're starting to pop up, and so I think, you know, I think that's good. You know, if people want to, you know, take off our model, and I'm not saying they are, you know, but I'm gonna take credit. No, that's good. I think that's a positive way to use NIL.
If somebody does make a donation, I think another question a lot of people have is anytime they donate money, they want to know, you know, a lot of charities are graded in a way like. For every dollar I donate, like where's that dollar going? I think that's like a transparency thing that a lot of people like. As much as you can share, if somebody makes a donation to Hoosiers for Good, how is that money being used at this time? I'm not asking you for like a detailed sheet of percentages. I'm just kind of curious for generally speaking, how is that allocated?
Yeah, you know, one of our, you know, kind of main priorities is to be transparent. And so, you know, when we're talking about, you know, following up with donors, you know, we really want them to know where their donation's going. So I imagine us writing handwritten notes or emails to them and letting them know how we're using that money, mm-hmm. and which charity that their money is going to, you know, be benefiting through a student athlete's NIL, because we want to be transparent. We don't want anybody to donate money and have zero idea where it's going. And so there'll be a follow-up from us. Whether it's a thank you card or just an email, letting them know here's a portion of your money and how it's being utilized.
I want to ask you, you know, obviously you're in a different role now, but you have spent some time obviously in the compliance area at IU Athletics. And I don't want to make this specific to IU, but what are the biggest challenges that these universities, these Power Five schools are facing right now when it comes to NIL? Because it doesn't seem like there's a lot of guidance or direction from the NCAA. Obviously, the NCAA kind of kicked this can down the road as long as they could until they had no other choice but to do this, or they were going to be subject to, I think, a lot of lawsuits. And really, the model just of how things worked for so long was no longer going to stand up in the environment. But I'm in the current environment, which I think it's good that this change came about. As difficult it was to get to this point, I think ultimately it should benefit everybody moving forward. But I'm just kind of curious from a compliance perspective, you know, you have the unique perspective that you've kind of been on both sides of it. What are the challenges that compliance departments, not just at IU, but in general are having with NIL, and what kind of things do you think need to improve moving forward to be able to navigate these waters to where everyone's one thing I'll add to people, everyone's never going to be on the same playing field, no matter what system we have. Let's acknowledge that. But I think there needs to be at least some kind of uniform rules that everyone's playing by, and it doesn't seem like that's the case right now.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of factors in there. that make it difficult. You know, it starts out with if you're in a state with a state law or you're not. And Indiana is not. So our applicable regulatory authority is the NCA. And so we've always, and I'm talking when I was at IU, and we had always been able to go to the NCA and ask questions. Hey, we've got this specific scenario. Can you help us give us interpretation on that scenario so we can provide guidance? With NIL and the current legal environment, being so concerned about an overly restricted answer, the NCA has not really been answering questions related to NIL. And I get it from their perspective. It's probably hard from their perspective. I used to work at the NCA. You know, a lot of people bash it. There's a lot of great people that do a lot of great work there. This current legal environment makes it really challenging. And so I think that's the biggest concern from a compliance perspective is for so long we've been trained to ask questions and now we're not getting answers. And that's what makes it hard.
So when you don't have that guidance from a compliance perspective, what kind of, do you just kind of rely on other people and you kind of just have to make a decision? I mean, I know, and I'll say this because, you know, I've known different people throughout the years that have worked in compliance and I kind of know how IU has always been. I mean, they fired Kelvin Sampson for text messages and phone calls. IU compliance has been the thing at IU for a long time and it's been important to the athletic directors, you know, since I've covered the team. I know Fred Glass and Scott Dolson have been, you know, they're very, very focused on compliance being at the forefront of how they want to run their department. But when you're not getting answers, it seems like to me that could leave a lot of gray area in terms of different rules being interpreted in different ways. Am I correct in assuming that?
Yeah, no, I think that's definitely a fair assessment. You know, but at the end of the day, you have to look at yourself in the eyes and your department and really fall back on your core values. And who you are, what you want to be. And I think we've done a pretty good job. IU has done a pretty good job.
Yeah. You've only been out of the job for a month, so you're still in your grace period.
Yeah, thank you. But you know, we still have the added benefit of talking to our peers at other schools who may have encountered a situation similarly and how they handled it. But yeah, you know, it's definitely challenging. And at the end of the day, you have to fall back on your values and who you are and who you want to be and let that guide you to make a reasonable decision and give a reasonable, you know, response.
One thing I'm curious, this first class of the 14 athletes, the charities that they're aligned with, how did those, you know, I don't know if you can speak specifically to Trace and Race and how they were kind of aligned with the one they were, or Grace Berger, Mackenzie Holmes, any of them specifically. I'm just kind of curious how those specific, obviously you have to assign somebody to each one and kind of find some synergy there. I'm just kind of curious what that process looked like and if you can speak maybe to Trace and Race, how their specific partnership came together.
Yeah, I'll speak at a general level. Knowing student-athlete schedules or student-athlete schedules are very challenging, right? You know, they've got class and then they've got practice and managing those schedules and knowing when they're available for an appearance, for example, is super challenging because they don't know what they're doing 2 weeks from now. And so I thought it was important to pair student-athletes that were from the same sport together as much as possible because mm-hmm. when Trace is not practicing, I also know Race is not practicing. Required practice anyways. And so that made it a little bit easier in doing it that way. You know, and the other thing that I thought was important in this process is, you know, I'll flip a question to you that will help me give a good answer. 4 weeks ago before our announcement, had you ever heard of Turnstone, that charity or even Stop the Violence Indianapolis?
No, I hadn't. To be honest, I looked at the list. I hadn't heard of any of those.
Yeah. So Turnstone and Stop the Violence Indianapolis, who Trace and Race are partnered with, you know, they do a lot of good work, but they don't have a lot of resources to help amplify and continue their mission. And I thought it was important for student athletes who did have a huge platform to be able to expose all the great work that those two charitable organizations do, you know, and their mission and their clients they serve. And so that was part of the decision too. And you know, the other charitable organizations, you know, Riley Children's, you know, Indiana Wish, you know, people have heard of those. And I'm not saying that in a way that I wouldn't have partnered Trace or Race with them. And it was just kind of a puzzle. And you know, part of the decision was, well, I need a pair of student athletes from the same sports together because that makes it easier. And then you know, some charities that we haven't heard of, maybe it's good for this first round to have those student athletes have a big platform to really shine a light on those organizations. And then Trace being from Indianapolis area and stop the violence, you know, with the gun violence rising in Indianapolis, that was important. And then Race, you know, when he was super vocal and being from Minneapolis with George Floyd, you know, those that just made a lot of sense.
I noticed on the website there's also something that's listed as an incubator type program for going forward. It sounds like student athletes are going to be able to pitch potential deal. Obviously this is kind of still in the infancy stages of how everything's going to work, but what can you tell us about that and what opportunities there may be for student athletes that weren't in this first initial class to maybe get involved in this moving forward?
Yeah, that's a phenomenal question. I'm glad you asked. So really our classes, you know, our spring class, and we're hopeful to have a fall class. You know, really those announcements are geared towards student athletes who already have a voice, a platform to add value. But we certainly don't want to exclude other student athletes. And so this charitable incubator program is really designed for student athletes who may not have a voice yet, who may not have a platform, but are super passionate about a specific charitable cause. And so they would submit a proposal to us explaining the charitable organization that they're passionate about, why they're passionate about it, activities they've done in the past, you know, et cetera. And we could enter into an agreement with them through this charitable incubator program to help them, you know, develop their voice and philanthropic entrepreneurialism.
So just one other thing to clarify on the first 14, was that a instance where you reached out to these 14 specifically? You did this, the board, what was the process of actually selecting the first 14 and how that worked? Or was it them reaching out to you and saying they're interested? Or obviously as being a kind of a new thing, I assume that you did most of the reaching out to them at the initial stages.
Yeah. You know, I reached out to them. You know, there was certainly a few more, but as I mentioned earlier, it's almost like an interview process, right? And I want to make sure that they're passionate about what we're doing and really genuinely care, because that's how you add value. And so, we've got it down to 14, and I reached out to them, you know, individually to talk to them, over the phone at a high level, and then would meet with them in person, to talk more specifics about what we're doing. And since our announcement, I've had several student athletes and charitable organizations reach out saying they want to be involved. And so that's been great.
Yeah. I was just curious kind of before we get you out of here, just obviously you had this initial group of charitable organizations that you worked at. I mean, obviously you've had a nice run here last couple of weeks of positive publicity, getting the word out. What's kind of been the response in terms of, hearing from other charitable organizations, and I guess how optimistic are you moving forward that you're going to have to go out and obviously raise money now? You mentioned that earlier. What are these next couple of months going to look like for you, and how do you feel like you're set up to be successful here over those next couple of months?
Yeah, you know, ever since our announcement last Thursday, you know, where we have 8 charitable partners at that point, I've had probably 3 or 4 reach out since. In the 6 days since we announced, several more have asked to be a part of this program. And so that's exciting, you know, because we want as many charitable organizations involved as possible. I don't envision us excluding anyone in the state of Indiana if they want to be involved. And then in terms of fundraising, we'll be doing that for the next couple months, and hopefully there'll be a lot of support. Like I said, you know, NIL is here to stay. It's a factor in everybody's decision nowadays. And it's important for us to be able to show that there are big opportunities here. But while you're doing those big opportunities, we're going to do it the Indiana way and make you better people while we're doing it.
What's the best way for folks to connect with Hoosiers for Good moving forward and to learn more? Obviously, we'll have the website, everything linked in the show notes. But you know, what's in your mind? You know, if there's one or two ways for people, obviously you're on Twitter and just kind of getting that presence growing and everything. But you have a website. Just speak however you want on this. Just in terms of people connecting with Hoosiers for Good, what's the most efficient way to do that? And if there is somebody listening that's involved with a charitable organization, what's the best way to reach out and get involved?
Yeah, you know, certainly give us a follow on social media. That'll keep you updated on all the great things we're doing. You can see that this is not it's not one of the things where, you know, we're just entering into agreements just to be able to, you know, get athletes or pay athletes. That's not what this is about. Our student athletes are going to work and they're going to really add value. And so we're going to be posting those, appearances, et cetera. But also don't hesitate to email me, tyler.harris@hoosiersforgood.org. Happy to talk to anybody about what we're doing. I think it's a very important endeavor. That goes for charities or for any potentially interested donors, to anybody who just wants to learn more. And so I would encourage anybody to reach out, and I'm happy to talk to them. But the more people we get to understand that NIL is the reality, but let's do it the Indiana way, I think the better off we're all going to be.
Excellent stuff, Tyler. And just, you don't have to respond to this, but just, this is just me editorializing for a second. I think the fact that you have the experience that you do with the athletic department working in compliance, you know, it sounds to me like this is going to be, obviously there's a lot of challenges ahead and everything that you're going to have to do. But I think the way that this is working out in terms of your background and everything, I think it's going to be an excellent fit. And hopefully, I try to tell people, as I said earlier in the show, there's a lot of people who are skeptical about this and have questions about it. I appreciate the fact that you've come on and been as transparent as possible. And also the fact, we can't say it enough, NIL is here to stay. And, a lot of people who are listening to the show are asking me, when's the next 5-star recruit going to commit to Indiana? Or when's Indiana going to go to a Final Four? Well, NIL is now a big part of that. And I think anything that, obviously you're not directly affiliated with IU, but you exist to work with student athletes in Indiana, I think anything that Indiana can do, that's within the rules, that is obviously, something that can benefit student athletes and also the athletic department, is an excellent thing. So thanks again, Tyler, for the time. I won't make you respond to that, but, we certainly appreciate it. And thank you for coming on and answering all of our questions. As for Podcast on the Brink, we will be back next week with another episode. It's been a busy offseason so far, still a lot to determine in terms of the roster for next season, recruiting beginning to heat up and all that. So if you enjoy the show, leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Podcast on the Brink.